Welcome to Meet My Brain, a field guide to autism. I'm your host, the Autistic Woman. In a recent episode called Isolation and Loneliness, I briefly talked about connection. Often an autistic person is limited in their understanding of the dynamics of connection. So are some non-autistics. There is one thing that connection requires, a key to connecting. I'll talk about that and more in this episode. We have connections of all types in our lives, from casual encounters, the work environment, and love. We have experience connecting, sometimes effectively, other times not. For autistics, it can be particularly challenging. Connection requires communication. Autism's diagnostic criteria includes persistent deficits in social communication and social interaction. If connection was easy for us, we would be non-autistic. As autistics, we have our own way of connecting. We move carefully as we navigate the process of social interaction with another person. With someone I don't know, I prefer to connect, at least at first, if it's possible, on an intellectual rather than emotional level. There are challenges I've found with connecting, such as uncertainty of how to go about it, thinking I have to know what the other person wants before I take a step in their direction, knowing what to say, going from a casual interaction to a deeper one too soon or not at all. The beginning of any friendship or relationship is stressful for me. It's something new. The person is new. There's a long learning curve for me to feel like I know them. What can you do if you're having trouble connecting? I find messages and emails to be a good way for an autistic person to get to know someone and find commonalities. We can talk about special interests and ask about theirs. We can reread the emails to better understand what's being said. We can even research before responding. Talking with someone by email is a connection. We know what it means to be of like mind. When we can talk with someone like us, someone who enjoys intellectual conversation, an emotional bond is forming, although perhaps not at a conscious level. The more you both enjoy talking about things that interest you, the more you connect. In the law, we use a term, appreciate the risk, which means being fully aware of the risk and moving forward with that knowledge. For example, did a buyer appreciate the risk of purchasing a house? That's a fixer-upper. We can do the same. We can understand that as autistics, we're at a greater risk of rejection or criticism. We can move forward anyway. By appreciating the risk, we might prevent the I should have knowns from cropping up to unsettle us. We can understand that not attempting to connect is the greater risk to our well-being and happiness. There are various levels of connection: fleeting, acquaintance, co-workers, colleagues, friends, confidants, family, partnerships, companionship, romance, and love. In some cases, a relationship can evolve through some of these levels. The clerk at the grocery store is a fleeting connection, typically lasting just a few minutes. It rarely evolves. An acquaintance can become a friend. With an autistic person, this might take more time than it does with non-autistics. An intellectual connection can turn to friendship with sharing of things that show who you are, like hobbies, news, music, milestones. A friendship becomes deeper as you learn about the other person and share things about yourself. In learning about autism, I've re-examined things in my life. It hadn't been at a conscious level that I was aware that something about me might be keeping friendships away. I had friends in grade school and high school. Still, these friends would choose to do things with each other rather than invite me. I didn't like it, but I figured it was just the way things are. My family moved from Chicago to Phoenix when I was 9 years old. I thought that my friends had already formed bonds with each other before I moved there. After all, I convinced myself, they'd known each other since kindergarten. So this was how I explained things to myself. I now admit I tried a variety of things in an effort to have friends. I joined Girl Scouts and Campfire Girls. I tried different churches that had youth groups. I was in the school band and orchestra. As introverted as I was and am, people still seemed to disappear out of my life, and I really didn't know why. They were friendly and nice to me at first, and then we sort of drifted away. I had this strange idea that if my friends wanted to hang out with me, they would call. If they didn't, they must be busy. It rarely occurred to me that I could call them. I did, just not enough to maintain the connection, I guess. In Chicago, at the time I lived there, extended families often lived relatively close to each other. If not, there were weekly or bi-monthly family dinners. School friends lived nearby. If we needed to use mass transit, there was a bus that came every few minutes. Phoenix was very different and still hasn't improved much. For years, the only mass transit was buses that came once an hour, and only until about 7 o'clock at night. This was a huge hindrance to making friends that aren't in the immediate neighborhood. Sometimes a connection at work can be easier, even though the relationship can be limited to work hours. If someone quit, though, for the most part, I never saw them again. Do you ever hear someone say, "Stay in touch," and wonder how you'd do that? Do they even mean it, or do non-autistics just say that? We're expected to know what "stay in touch" means and how to go about it, so I usually do nothing more than answer, "You too." In my opinion, face-to-face contact is ultimately important for a connection to grow past a certain point. It's an exchange of energy. It enables growth and stability of the connection. It helps with loneliness and isolation. Connecting with someone's mind can ultimately be a connection with their heart. When there's mutual sharing, I feel closer as I learn about the other person. We're building something because we're both invested and are being vulnerable. But wait, autistics are said to overshare. For me, it's because I don't always know where the line is. I first try to go by my comfort level. If something doesn't feel right, I'll examine the reasons. If it's fear, what am I afraid of? I think about whether I want a friendship with this person or whether I want to keep things at acquaintance. I might share things with a friend that I wouldn't tell a coworker. It takes a long time for me to open up. I can take the lead from the other person if it feels comfortable to do so. If someone starts telling me their marital problems, though, and I'm nothing more than acquaintances, that's oversharing. It seems like we autistics analyze each encounter, and usually not favorably. We go over what we said and how we could have put it better. We, in essence, beat ourselves up over it. We feel frustration at our limitations. Most of us script before talking with or meeting with someone. Since learning that oversharing can be an autistic thing, I've started being more careful about what I'm planning to say. I ask myself if it's really necessary to talk about something, I'm working on forming a new habit. So, what is the key to true connection? It's vulnerability. To be vulnerable is to be open and to risk being hurt. It's not a weakness. Reaching out to someone else means allowing yourself to be vulnerable. As autistics, we're aware of our limitations in social situations. This can keep us from taking the risk of forming a connection. For one thing, we think we can't. For another, we're aware of what social rejection feels like. Keep this in mind. You won't have a meaningful connection without vulnerability. As a kid, I was oblivious to what it might be that left me without friends. I wouldn't have understood what someone meant if they told me to be open and vulnerable. I didn't know how to do it. Autistics mask, and in doing so, we avoid being vulnerable. Copying, a non-autistic's communication style, can keep us from forming connections because basically we're not being real. I think the majority of autistics benefit from autistic connections. We understand each other's language. When I start a sentence in the middle of a thought, an autistic person knows what I mean. I can follow the conversation, even if it jumps all over the place. If I can't, all I have to do is ask for clarity. And an autistic person usually doesn't take it personally, coming from another autistic person. With an autistic, it feels natural to skip the small talk. As most of us know, a great conversation starter with an autistic person is, "Tell me about your special interest." A conversation starter with a non-autistic person might be asking an open-ended question like, "What have you been up to?" Here are some thoughts about ways to create a connection with another autistic person. At first, stick to intellectual subjects and listen to what the other person says. We often reveal ourselves even in intellectual pursuits. An autistic person is probably analyzing it anyway. Share something personal that relates to the intellectual discussion you're having. By personal, I mean relating it to a life experience or to your job or hobby. That interjects something about you without sharing what you're not ready to share. Talk about something casual about yourself, the music you like, what you like to do on weekends, your hobbies or special interests. For in-person connection with someone new, it's easier for me when we do something together. Hiking, going to an art festival, going to a concert. Those are things that give me time with another person. We can talk about the activity we're doing, and conversation feels more natural. For those of us who sit at home waiting for someone to invite us to something, make the first move, as hard as that might be. The advantage of inviting someone yourself is that you get to pick the activity. That takes pressure off the other person to come up with something. You'll feel more in control if you choose. The other person might be hoping to hear from you. Try not to overlook these benefits of connecting. The value of emotional engagement, that relationships can provide energy, not just deplete it. It's a way to see yourself through someone else's eyes. And there are opportunities to learn and to try things you haven't before. Connection is a basic human need. Vulnerability is key. We can't lead mentally healthy lives without it. Most people are searching for an answer to the questions, "What is the most important thing in life?" or "What makes life meaningful?" You might not have found the answer yet, so I'll save you some time and tell you. Spoiler alert. It's relationships, connections. Yes, the most important thing is one of the hardest for us to do because of how our brains are hardwired. We have to push against the resistance we feel. The cost of staying stuck is too high. Psychologist and professor Brian Lowry puts it this way. The self is a constraint. You're actually the relationships you have, the social interactions you have, and the cultural context you exist in. I encourage you to be vulnerable with someone you can trust and, to the extent you feel confident. A fleeting connection might last for a moment or a day. A deep one can last a lifetime. Contact me on Twitter at @anautisticwoman or by email at info@theautisticwoman.com. I truly enjoy connecting with you. If you like the podcast, spread the word so more people can understand what it's like to be autistic. Subscribe to the podcast, which is now rated in the top 1.5% of all podcasts globally. Thank you for being part of the podcast's success. Your support on PayPal or Patreon is valued and appreciated. This has been Meet My Brain, a field guide to autism. I'm the Autistic Woman. Slava Ukraine.